Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwen Sheltimer, my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest this week, Catherine Hawley.
Hello, Gwen.
Hi.
And listeners.
Yes. That was a poignant reading before, because when most of our authors are writing fiction and we're used to terrible things happening, but it's interesting as I listen to you to realize that everything I'm listening to is actually happened. It's the truth. It's very real.
And it's very unsettling to know it's the truth, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. Because of that, I guess it has a really important message for readers about the necessity of being aware of possible pitfalls and some of the dangers that might occur with our healthcare system. As wonderful as our system is, these things do occur.
And it is very good.
So what advice would you give to listeners who are perhaps facing medical care challenges like you did?
Well, first of all, I don't believe that anyone goes into the healthcare system intending to do harm. But in this day and age, harm happens, and it happens often. Anyone and everyone is at risk of being potentially misdiagnosed, over-medicated, given an incorrect prognosis, and even of receiving inadequate follow-up care. So many people still think they should just accept what their doctor says. Often people don't know that they have the right to ask and be part of the options and the alternatives for their care. People who suffer cognitive issues particularly are at a terrible risk. In the appendix, I added in 14 abbreviated but really important lessons. But in a nutshell, the main thing, as you just mentioned, is that people have to be prepared to be an informed patient. They have to be prepared to advocate for themselves. You have to be the cohesive unit. You have to be part of your medical team. Sometimes they're not going to like it, but you're the one who has the most at stake. So knowing your own medical information, knowing about your medications, thing next is asking questions. You have to ask, why is there a test? What are the results? I learned that keeping a journal was vital. If you don't write it down, you will forget what someone told you. It's vital, and it's also the thing you can take to each doctor's appointment. Appointing an advocate is more than just relying on your spouse. You have to have clear conversations with people about what you want to happen. You need to give them written permission to speak on your behalf. So people also need to be willing to keep searching for activities, therapies, other treatments, alternative medicine. Our story certainly became more complex than some, but it is by no means unique, and even in very simple cases, things can go very, very wrong.
Getting back to the writing of this experience, how did that affect your relationship with your husband?
People ask me that all the time, Gwen. I was thrust into the role of advocate unwillingly. I mean, that was not something that was ever in our expectations. But I believed heart and soul that the decision to send him at 56 to a nursing home was so wrong and so premature that that fueled me, which in turn fueled him. Becoming someone's physiotherapist and their counselor and their nurse and their researcher and lots of times their fighter normally would take away from your relationship, I think. I think it has the possibility. It didn't for us. My struggle was to maintain my position as his wife and his partner and not fall into the mindset of being his caregiver.
Right. And what did you learn from writing the book?
Oh, well, I learned a great deal about writing. That was certainly one of them. I'd always written, but to write a story like this and keep it authentic, I sometimes found it difficult to step back and keep it from being a rant. Because I'm obviously very passionate about this. I discovered how to find my own voice and style. I learned that if it feels right to you, that's the way you have to write it. The other thing I learned as I was writing, because of course as you talk to people and you say, yeah, I'm working on a book that's about a journey through the healthcare system, I've heard dozens to hundreds of stories, and I realized that ours, while I thought was maybe a one-of-a-kind, these problems are systemic. One of the things that I came across in the writing of the book, again, to keep it honest and fair, I discovered the healthcare report from 2004 called the Adverse Events Report, in which the government of Canada admits from their statistics that 10,000 people died that year as a direct result of hospital mishap.
Oh, dear.
In 2006, the number had risen dramatically. Sadly, as I was getting ready to launch my book, I realized that that number has gone up exponentially.
Well, that's not good news.
It is definitely not. So...
So that is that what's leading into your second book?
That has led into book two, which is, again, a very different writing experience. Writing from the third-person perspective certainly requires more research, certainly requires far more fact verification, but it also is much less emotional when you're writing somebody else's stories. So for me, the author, this is an easier project. Longer project, but an easier project.
Well, I think they're both very important projects. Could we ask you to read a little more?
Absolutely, I'd love to. So, from the decision to send my husband to a nursing home and my decision that that wouldn't happen, we, having landed in Trenton Hospital, we only stayed there a few months and then decided, for a million reasons, to go home. And so I'm going to fast forward from the day we went home to 2 years later. On May the 4th, I had to deliver on a promise. I had agreed to speak in Hamilton at a conference for brain injury professionals. I had said yes because despite my anger and frustration with the system, I still believed many people were doing the very best they could to help us. And I had an ulterior motive. I needed to show that our very amateur home rehab program was working, and I needed our story to make a difference. These were the people who could make changes in the way rehabilitation is done. I needed them to see that the healthcare system had expected us to give up our life together. The first presentation was by a woman telling her son's story. At 17, he had been the victim of a brutal, unprovoked attack by violent strangers. His injuries were life-threatening, and he sustained a severe brain injury. Life and death hung in the balance for many, many days. To her credit, and to my amazement, the attack was not her focus. Instead, she was intent on crediting the professionals. The Hamilton area has significant brain injury programs, and her family, according to her, was fortunate to live in that region. With a very professional, colorful slideshow, she described her son's journey immediately following surgery. The slides demonstrated the dedication of the therapists in the acute care hospital. My mind darted away as her slideshow rolled. How did he get such amazing help? Did this come from the same healthcare system I've been battling with for 2 years? The mother reclaimed my attention when she clicked a new picture onto the screen. After nearly 2 years in specialized rehab, her son was making his first visit home. Questions ricocheted around in my mind. Why was our story so different from theirs? Who decides who gets what help? Who decides which patients are more likely to be a success story? This young man's early prognosis didn't sound any more optimistic or hopeful than Bill's. Oh my God, how could I be jealous of this young man's horrible experience just because of the rehab he was afforded? And then it was time for my presentation. It was titled, Home is Where the Heart and Rehabilitation Is. I was quaking inside as I crossed to center stage, but once I started to speak, the words flowed easily. I had put together a very amateur 20-minute video of what I considered to be the most valuable parts of our life at home. I wanted them to see and know the face of the person this story belonged to. I pressed the pause button and spoke again. My husband was a very independent and determined man. He still is, although independent is a relative term in our house now. When Bill came home in July of 2003, he was enormously deconditioned, struggling to remain awake for more than an hour or two. He had difficulty carrying out the most basic tasks of everyday life, shaving, brushing his teeth, sitting up. But as we crept along, developing a routine to help him regain skills, by guess and by God, he's made huge advances. Being declared disposable was a devastating blow. Early intervention, any intervention for that matter, would have made a vast difference in our journey. I paused and tried to catch my breath and stay calm. Competent home care and staff with rehabilitation skills is a rarity in our home. Continuity was incredibly difficult to maintain. And at the beginning, I didn't have a clue what the financial issues of this would be. I never realized that 2.5 years later, I still wouldn't be back to work full time, nor that we would sink into an ocean of death. There were 1,000 things I didn't know. I looked out at the crowd again and paused, and then spoke. but I did know that we would do anything for each other and we would make a new life. I bet some of you are thinking I need anger management counseling. Most of the audience laughed, but I sensed they realized how serious this was. Knowing that a nursing home was the only solution offered by the hospitals and our healthcare system, I want you to see some pieces of Bill's life now, our life. I pressed the play button and watched with the audience as Bill appeared on the screen. He was totally focused on the miniature hockey game on the table. With shot after shot, he sent the puck flying down into Kevin's end. When he scored, the tiny rink played a tune like a lottery kiosk. Bill grinned at Kevin and said, "Gotcha." Another scene began. Bill was in the middle of a swimming pool, using only a styrofoam noodle for support. He was alternately dog paddling and treading water. Grinning at Frank, the physiotherapist, he shot a splash of water at him. Next frame, he was sitting at the easel, studying the brush in his hand. In a flurry, he brushed green acrylic paint on the canvas, the brush strokes smooth and rhythmic and gentle. He brushed outward, softening the green until the grass looked shrouded in mist. David, the art teacher, was mesmerized. It was beautiful. In the next shot, he was sitting at the table, carefully forming the pastry for turnovers around blueberry filling. He examined each item carefully and then declared, "Ready for the oven." I pushed the pause button again and spoke to the audience. Imagine how much more might have been possible. Imagine how much more might already have been accomplished. Imagine what you would want for your own husband or wife or child. Do any of you think, as I do, that Bill deserved better than to spend the rest of his life in a nursing home? I pushed the play button for the last time, saying, "This is the greatest reason life at home is better for us than a nursing institution." There we were, propped up in bed, shoulder to shoulder, drinking our coffee, watching the morning news. Jessie was clamoring over me to get her treats from Bill. In the background, a CD played Shania Twain's song, "Looks Like We Made It." As I turned off the video, I could see many tear-streaked faces. They understood. Quietly, I said, "As you continue your work, please remember, where there's a will, there may very well be a way. Please be inspired by Bill, by love, by commitment, and by desperation. Please remember us."
Wow, that's quite a legacy. Thanks very much, Catherine.
Thank you very much, Gwen. This has been a lovely experience.
For our listeners, where can they get your book?
Quickest way to get the book is actually from the book's website, www.thefightofourlife.ca. It's available on amazon.com and .ca. It is available at Chapters Indigo, and just a couple of weeks ago, it came out in the ebook format, so it's available in both Kindle and Kobo, and it is in the local bookstores in Northumberland.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much. Thank you for supporting the book, Gwen.
You're welcome. And to our listeners, if you would like to connect with us and leave comments or questions, write to us at wordonthehills897@gmail.com or leave a comment at our website, wordonthehills.com. So thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us again next week.